Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I dagens episode av ukens vintips har vi besøkt litt langt vekk ifra. Faktisk helt fra New Zealand kommer vinmaker Daniel Sorell. Welcome to studio.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a long trip from Berlin.
From Berlin, not too bad, but from New Zealand to Germany, it was quite a long trip, yeah. About 30 hours all up.
Okay. How many times did you lose your phone on the way?
Only once.
Only once, okay. So you're offline, but online here.
Exactly.
That's good. I'm very happy to have you here in the studio. We're going to talk about Claudie Bay, an iconic wine from New Zealand, who is more in the books than in the present shop sometimes. I want to hear about the secrets to our listeners. We have many times heard about Claudie Bay, but not so many have tasted verticals of Claudie Bay, how good it is. I want to hear about when they talk about that is the storage is better than Sancerre, we heard, but it is a rumor or what. But first of all, please, Daniel, what is Claudie Bay in New Zealand today?
I think Claudie Bay is still the benchmark of New Zealand wines. It's consistently delivers every year, and it's a wine that, I've just come from Berlin, and we're heading from here, Oslo, to back to the UK. It's a wine that is really recognised all around the world now, and it's quite a phenomenal success that it's had in the last 35 years.
Hmm. It started all in 1985, but also, do you know how much wine they made the first vintage?
No, I don't, but no. I'd say very little the first year. No. David, the original founder, bought grapes from a gentleman called John Hoare, and there wasn't a lot of grapes around at the time, to be honest. There was only about another five other wineries that existed, so I wouldn't have thought much more than a couple of thousand cases max.
Hmm. Because for me, who have been tasting Claudie Bay for many, many years, I've seen Claudie Bay as it's their own style. A change of acidity the latest 10 years had been more fruit-driven. It had been more precise for each vintage. But also in the Norwegian market with over 2,500 wines, it's disappearing a little bit. Because, as you probably know, New Zealand is having other market leaders. So Sauvignon Blanc, okay, how many are there in Norway? Many. And then Claudie Bay is hidden in the books, that the icon wine. And then the price is good. But the image of Claudie Bay have been hidden because Norway have too many wines. But if you go to another country or to New Zealand or whatever other country you can watch on, you will see that Claudie Bay is very popular, much more popular and more famous. Do you think that Claudie Bay should be more present in Norway through tastings? Because as we're going to taste afterwards, the new vintage of 22, and we have the 2021 in the shops today. It's coming in November, December, the 22 vintage. But do you think the Claudie Bay have changed in a certain way that it's many similar wines in the market?
No, I think we've stuck to our beliefs and our philosophy. The vineyards that David originally bought are where the winery is today, and we haven't really deviated from that. We've realistically, our Sauvignon Blanc has to come from these typical dry riverbeds. That's where we get our style from, our Sauvignon Blanc. Present-wise, why in Oslo it's not as iconic as other wines or other markets? maybe it's down to the monopoly a little bit. I do believe that, you know, we've had, everyone's had COVID for the last couple of years, and I know that there's plans to have some activations in Oslo this year and really start getting at Cloudy Bay out there. So hopefully there'll be some really nice events, and that will put Cloudy Bay back out there.
But Cloudy Bay, could you tell me a little bit behind the numbers for people who don't know how big it is? How many bottles do you produce a year by the original Cloudy Bay? Because Cloudy Bay is not Cloudy Bay anymore. It's just, it's many wines under it. They're under the brand.
No.
It's only Cloudy Bay.
We only make five wines, three different varietals. So the Sauvignon Blanc is our main varietal and also our main wine. So we make roughly about 70% of our volume is Sauvignon Blanc. And then we have a still Chardonnay. We have another Sauvignon Blanc called Tococo, which is a combination of aged in large format vats, barriques and concrete. And they'll spend about a year aging in those, and then we'll blend, and then they'll spend another year in bottle before it's released. And then we have two Pinot Noirs. we have one from Marlborough, and then we have one from a place called Centro Otago, which is about 300 kilometres south of where the winery is, called Tawahi. And then we also make a sparkling wine from Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. So,
but do the export of the, you know, the 70% is Sauvignon Blanc, but the export is higher for the Sauvignon Blanc than the Chardonnay and the Pinot Noir?
Well, percentage-wise, it would be similar, but we make less of. So we 70% of our production is Sav, and then 10% of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and sparkling wine. So,
you are probably the most common question you have. But how many hectares are Cloudy Bay having now to produce wine?
We're 565 hectares. Out of that, we're about 70% estate grown, and then we have roughly about 30% growers, which those growers have been with us from day one. So well, they're part of the family, really.
But where do you place Cloudy Bay in size when you have over 500 hectares in New Zealand?
We're 565 hectares doesn't sound boutique, but in the grand scheme of things for Marlborough, we are. We're one of the smaller producers. This year was our largest harvest. We did about 7,000 tons of fruit. So, you know, the ambition is to grow, but we'll grow organically and only when certain sites will come available for us to purchase.
But the 560 hectares are also in many different plots. It's not only one.
No,
many, you know.
Yep,
so,
yep.
So, but it's normal to grow when you have that success, Cloudy Bay have, and other brands from New Zealand. Because New Zealand have been a little bit, it's coming. I've been in the wine business for some decades now, and I see that New Zealand have a very positive atmosphere in the Norwegian consumers. But it also have been some bestseller who have been there, Twin Island and some others, who have been there, Matua and so on, have been there with their commercial taste and very low priced. And then this is a dimension extra of quality. And to reach that quality in Sauvignon Blanc, what is the benefits that makes Cloudy Bay that concentration driven of fruit?
Yeah, look, I think there's a few key factors there that we do. As I mentioned before, the pedigree of vineyards that we have, some of those sites are absolutely truly amazing. We crop a lot lower than a lot of other business models for Marlborough. So Cloudy Bay on average is about 10 to 12 tons per hectare, depending on the site. there's certain sites that can handle a little bit more crop, but still give us the concentration and stylistically what we're chasing, aromatic profile, etc. And then just, I guess, what we do in the winery, a massive thing to protect our quality and our style is obviously part of being LVMH. We have the luxury to have all our own harvesters. We can pick when we really want to. Everything is done by taste, not by numbers. We go around and we're tasting, and when that block's ready to go, we will harvest it. And we may not take all of it if it's a little bit inconsistent. We'll come back 2 days later and pick the rest of it. So having that, and then we keep every parcel separate until we get to the blending bench. And it's quite a simple process. One, it's and there's five of us on the blending committee. If we all say it's a one, it's in the blend. A two, we'll come back to it on day two or three once we've got through all the ones. A three automatically goes into sale wine, and then we put all the ones together and we have a look what we're missing, if it needs a little bit more concentration or doesn't need a bit more lift or a bit more stone fruits. Then we go back through all those twos and we look for what we need, and we may not add all of one component, but 10% yeah. will be. And so that really helps, keeps the house style and consistency. And
yeah. You told me that you started up as a winemaker in 2015, and you are one of three winemakers in that size. That's quite normal. If not, you have been overworked, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was only two of us there for quite a while, so it's nice to have the third one on board.
That's good. But in which kind of training do you have to you know, I think the Clos des Bay by concentration and some other factors in the wines. If I have it 1 or 2 years, I'm very, very excited to taste the new vintage now, the 22. But are there any special thing you look after when you see, this is a good Sauvignon Blanc? Because you taste it when it is not done.
No.
You're going to taste it when... And the second question is... you have been there now for 7 years as a winemaker. That means that over these years, when do you think you're managing Clos des Bay in the total? You think it takes 7 years, or do you need more years to understand the Clos des Bay secrets?
Yeah, a couple answers on that. I think really important is the people that have come before, respecting what they've done, but don't rest on, you know, your laurels. You've got to continuously push, and we have an R&D winery where we do weird and wacky things, and out of those, you know, 9 out of 10 may not make the grade, but 1 out of 10 is something that we really love, and then we build on that and we build on that. And so we're always evolving Cloudy Bay, and I think that's definitely something that you've got to keep doing, because the people that started were pretty innovative and risk takers back in the day to have a go at making something from Mulba, which, you know, 37 years ago, there was no real wine culture in New Zealand. We all drank beer and there wasn't any...
You haven't stopped drinking beer.
No, we haven't.
No, no,
not at all.
Yeah.
You know, to make good wine, you've got to drink a few beers too.
Okay, that's so good to hear.
and also, we're lucky where, you know, when I came, a gentleman, the chief winemaker, was a guy named Tim Heath. He had been there for about 8 years, learnt from the original, you know, winemakers, Kevin and James. And so all that knowledge has been taken through. And then I spent 4 years under Tim, so I've learnt off him. And the people are still there, you know. The Kevin and James are in Marlborough. You can always go and have a chat to them. They're very, you know, knowledgeable and will share information. We're all about promoting Marlborough in New Zealand. So that's one thing. And I just think Cloudy Bay, you've got the opportunity there. The tools, being part of LVMH, gives us the flexibility. If we're having a difficult year, we don't have to make wine to a case make. It's always about quality. So, you know, we're blessed in that side. That's, you know, a business model that a lot don't have. So,
yeah, one is the size when you see that part, but you can also see in other great icon wines that even if the size and many bottles have been made each year, many producers who keep that premium style, they keep also on investing in people and also investment in vineyards. They are keeping high maintenance of all the equipment they have. But I see that in the bottles we have now, you have changed the packaging. For me, the Clos des Bay is getting greener, who is quite true. It's a greener-ish color. The white iconic label have been a bit lower. It have been a press in the bottle, who is very nice. And then, of course, screw caps, who arrived in 2001.
Two.
2001. And Skurkap is something that was very good in Norway, but in Norway we have go back to ordinary corks. The Skurkaps have been more popular for wines who should be drunk 2-3 years. But Claudie Bay, now you can ask the question, is his aging better than Sansa?
That was a question asked, and it was answered with a little bit of tongue in cheek. Yeah. And I said, "Of course it does." Look, I think there's some amazing salves that do age extremely well, and Claudie Bay is one of those. And you know, you have to have all the stars align. The 2021 was probably for me the best harvest I've had at Claudie Bay, and I do think that wine will age extremely well. And then, of course, under Stelvin, it's going to age consistently.
Because my oldest Sancerre have been since 1991 from Vacheron in Sancerre, who is a biodynamic producer, is concentrated and good. And I learned at that time that Sancerre could be, even if the aroma is changing a little bit, it is potential to age. But I see the screw cap here is holding me a little back to age it for 10 years, for instance. So for me, the Claudie Bay, with the package that I have to know and the knowledge I have, I wouldn't take it in the cellar for 15 years with the screw cap.
I went...
Do you have some tests on
it? When I came in 2015 was our 30-year anniversary, and we went back and opened up every bottle from the library. And as we mentioned before, from 2002 backwards was under cork. And back in the day, New Zealand didn't have access to great cork, and we probably didn't sell the bottles that great either. But when you got a bottle that was 15 years old, up to 20 years old, that was in good tack, the wines were beautiful. They were really amazing. They sort of aged like an old Vouvray, really sort of got honeysuckle and nougat. Really impressed how well they aged. So the
screw cap have been coming better also.
Yeah, I think for the style of wine, it definitely, yeah. I mean, I still personally love cork. I think there's a romance to it. But that's maybe for big reds. But for this style of wine to trap in those aromatics, I think screw cap is absolutely perfect.
Selvfølgelig må jeg bare takke Temtec igjen. Takk for at dere gjør denne podcasten her mulig. Hvis du på jakt etter et vinskap, og det burde man nesten alltid være, så sjekk ut Temtec sin Prestige-serie, en av toppseriene til Temtec. Bygg din kjøkkenet, la de stå fritt for seg selv, store, små, forskjellige zoner, trehjuler, LED-belysning, juster temperatur, lys på egne paneler, luftfuktighet, label view hvis du har lyst til å se flaskene før du åpner kjøleskapet. Sjekk ut prestigeserien til Temptech, og tusen takk igjen hos Power, selv hos Gunners Power, og takk igjen Temptech for at dere gjør podcasten her mulig.
I think it's time to drink your wine.
Thank you,
Daniel. I think we're going to start with the vintage who was present in the Monopole shop when this podcast is running. And that's 2021, and then we're going to compare it a little bit to 2022. Let me hear what you think about the wine when it have been in the market for a while. It have been it's 2021. We are now talking about late 2022. It's over one and a half years since it released. Please let me think what you.
It should be really 1 year in the market because we launch on the 1st of October and we're around about 1st of October now. So, look, as I mentioned before, 2021 was one of the best years of, if not the best year for Sauvignon for me since I've been at Claudie Bay. Has all the hallmarks of a classic Claudie Bay. Really, really good concentration.
You have a long concentration.
Yeah, so 21 across the board in Marlborough, everyone was probably down about 30% on yields. So even for ourselves, we were down. So really did have a lot of concentration. But then the aromatics was there as well. So really nice season. And, you know, after a couple of years of COVID, which haven't been too much fun in the cellar when everyone has to wear masks, et cetera, It was nice that Mother Nature played a part and we could go out and pick when we want. And It was just a lovely, lovely long vintage that we could pick everything at optimum ripeness. So for me, it's got those lovely stone fruits, but then there's limes coming through underneath. But then it's all pinned around that backbone of acidity, which is what.
When we have that kind of acidity in the wines, we often talk about saltiness. Do you anything you are saying that we call it minerality, but it's saltiness, but its acidity was just high.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly numbers for this one here, but normally when I see and taste a Clos de Bay, I look for that acidity saltiness feeling and concentration who longer than 10-12 seconds. And if you have ever tasted, you probably did, but a commercial Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, and sorry, but that's crappy shit who's coming. But I understand it because some values of the Sauvignon Blanc with commercial actors is that iconic smell that give points to more points that change Sancerre from a Sauvignon Blanc. Could you tell me a little bit about the name?
So it's the thiols that make up the aromatic component in Sauvignon Blanc.
And it's called?
Thiols.
Yeah.
And then there's three different types. So you've got the first one, which we try not get in, the methoxies, the more the green characters. And
The herbal.
Yeah. We don't mind a little bit of herbal, like fresh herbs, but not on the grass characters because thiols are very unstable and they fall over very quickly. So what you have in the glass and the bottle straight away, 6 months down the track, they've already diluted by nearly sort of 50%. So
that's what you find in commercial low-priced.
I'm not going to be quoted in saying that.
Other
business models have, they don't have the luxury of having their own harvesters like we do and can pick when we want. They know that they've got to get through 40,000 tons or et cetera.
We know that there's different segments in the market.
So they have a start date and they have an end date. So they're going to have, more spectrum of those flavors. And so they'll have the greens, but then they'll have the high tropical notes as well. And those two are the ones that are more unstable. And so, you've heard about things that look like tinned asparagus after 6 months or a year, or even worse, they call it cat's pee.
The cat pee is familiar.
That's what we're trying to avoid in our wines. Yeah. We want to be in the MH range, which is right in the middle. The stone fruits, we don't mind having a little bit of sprinkling of tropicals and a little bit of the fresh herbs, but our key, what we're trying to chase is in that stone fruit, lime, citrus note.
Yeah, because that's recognizable. You can recognize a Clos de Bay well stored of that opinion, that is a citrus minerality and a fruity thing. You call it the stone fruit.
I sort of, that acid, as you were mentioning before, mineral, I'm more sort of like, I see it as oyster shells. And it's a little sort of, that saline, nice, sort of
crunched oyster shell. Well, if you call some oyster shell in you, we call it kalk.
Kalk.
Yeah, kalk, okay. But if we go to the, it was a nice, quiet 2021 vintage. You have lots of time to make the best wine. You have probably used a lot of time in the vineyards. You will be playing PlayStation at home.
It
was
much
a family thing. Yeah. You discover life. You probably have a new hobby. Did you have a new hobby?
I have many hobbies, unfortunately, and they all take up a fair bit of time. I love old cars, and I've been restoring an old car there, and then I bought an old bungalow. This
old car?
Yeah.
Which car?
I've got a 1964 Ford Falcon.
Ford Falcon. That's good. That's
probably not good for Norway because I hear you're virtually all electric these days.
Yeah. So
I might have to change over the V8 to electric.
I don't think. But the Ford Falcon is fantastic good.
Yeah,
so
it's beautiful.
But a good thing to have hobbies except for wine. But if we go to the 22 vintage. And now it has a little bit new design. You still see the name on the label. It's, I think it's a nice bottle, more exclusive, I think. I've seen the Clos de Bay now for many, many years at that present, so it's good to have new. But you see it have the green approach. Could you tell me about the change? Why did you change now?
Well, to be honest, I make what goes in the wine. I don't do the packaging side of things. We have a marketing team.
But then we can have ID, okay.
Yeah. My understanding is, so in 2015, going into 16, we moved away from our original first label and we went to this label.
Yeah, the white
one. Is what the 2021 is. So we've had that for about 4 or 5 years now, and I think they realized that maybe we've gone a little bit too far and wanted to go back to some more of the original show, a bit more of the original Richmond Rangers, be a bit more textile into the bottle and cleaner lines, which I think is what Cloudy Bay is, and I think they've done a great job there. And for me, the wine's all about purity and a sense of place, and I think they capture that quite well with the mantle range on the glass. So.
You know, the green color is often used in hospitals to keep people quiet.
Okay.
Yeah. So we often see that color a little bit lighter in hospitals in Norway, in old hospitals. So you probably be quite more quiet when you taste and drink the wine. But let us taste the Claude Bain. It's coming now in November or maybe in December. And the allocation to Norway have been a little bit raised, luckily enough, because these wines have a lot of people who buys it in quantities. Often you can see that in the orders of Claude Bay, they're ordering 6, 12, 24, 36 bottles, maybe take it to a cabin, but you probably have collectors. And you see often that Claude Bay could be sold out before spring, and then it's coming a new release or second release from a hub in Europe, I think, somewhere. But usually the Claude Bay have it income to the market. Got good points. The recent 2021 Claudie Bay have a points for me who's a bit lower than international, about 88, 89 points. 88, like this one here. And now we're going to taste. Please describe the 22 vintage compared to 21. What is the difference between that? You said that 21 was a good vintage.
Yeah, so 21, like I mentioned, apart from maybe for the accountants, the fact that we're down on volume, 22 was a lot more challenging for the vineyard guys especially. They had a pretty cold and frosty start to the season, so a lot of sleepless nights for those guys, up making sure all the windmills and fans, the frost fans are working, and if they had to fly helicopters, they would and did. But yeah, so the growing season started off pretty tough, and we're probably down a little bit on yields. But what came through at the end, we had a great summer from basically Christmas through to harvest. So that was the saving grace for 2022, except for virtually everything ripened at once. So yes. It was very condensed, very short, sharp. Long hours, where 21 was just sort of, well, we'll pick a couple hundred ton today, a couple hundred ton tomorrow. This was 1-2 days of sort of warm up and then full noise.
Yeah. Okay. So. But if I compare to the two ones here, this one here, you have a typical thing of a new wines in I call it air sick, you know, probably this bottle here, I don't know, but this is a bit less of this strong acidity. It's underlaying there, it's there, but it's not showing yet.
No, I think these wines start showing better after Christmas. They just need a little bit of time. We started harvest around about the end of March, and then we're putting it in bottle in August to get it on the water to get to the market. So it's pretty fast and furious to do that, and I think the wines just need a
how long
bit
is the harvest period normally?
We start roughly about the middle of Feb, picking our sparkling base, and then we'll finish round about the 20th to the round there of April would be round our last pick. There's been certain years where they've gone late into May, but generally, with climate change and things warming up, we're done by about sort of that mid April to late April.
Okay, but how have the climate changed, Claudie Bay, in late? So, because the wine industry, they talk about climate all the time, But in a climate like New Zealand, of course, maybe it's getting hotter. Maybe it's getting. I heard that some new grapes probably will come also. But what is the fear you have for the climate change?
We are going to have to adapt, and we are going to have to change. Maybe not right now, but there's definitely a lot of thinking going on now to set up for the future. Things are going to change. But the biggest thing I'm seeing is more extremities. Before we came over, at the moment, half of Marlborough is underwater. If anything's low-lying, you're knee-deep in vines and water. We're quite lucky where we are that it's extremely free-draining, so it disappears pretty much overnight. But we've had more rain in the last month than we almost probably have in the calendar year. And then going into summer, we're seeing the same. It's either we'll get a cyclone come down from Australia, or the nights have been a lot warmer than historically. But then 21 is perfect again. Yeah. So,
a little up and down.
I think it's just going to be like that. And, we will have to learn different ways to deal with disease pressure, et cetera.
But you haven't changed pruning or changing way methods yet.
No,
but
not yet.
Are you doing some tests can be prepared for something?
We definitely are. Yeah. And so there's lots of things going on at the moment.
For me, you look like a playful guy. But I think about the wines, how if you're going to improve, you have to test.
Yeah.
And if I have you ever tasted Claudie Bay with blends? Not Claudie Bay, of course, but you've tested out blends that Chardonnay or whatever grape it is, to include Semillon, for instance, who have been something in.
Adding another variety.
To test how the wine would be.
No, we haven't. We haven't looked into that yet. I think the main thing that we're looking at is moving away from herbicides. And that is our big plan at the moment. And there's a lot of investment going into that side of things and being more sustainable.
Do you have an end date of that? It should be ready to 2025 or 2026?
I would like to think by 2025 we'll be herbicide-free.
Yeah, completely.
Where the biggest challenge is the terrain that we have, our Tuar. We have a lot of rocks and trying to...
It's not so deep soil.
No, not very deep. No. It's like I said, it's very free draining, alluvial soils, little stones, and it just doesn't hold a lot of water. But you have these they're called grey wrecky stones. They're about this big, subsurface, and they destroy a lot of your equipment if you're trying to weed. So that's why herbicides have been so successful and well used in the past. But there's been a lot of research, and we've got people that some smart people working in the vineyard now, and not that they weren't smart before, but they've come up with some very clever alternatives, and AI is definitely an approach going forward.
But I have some producers in New Zealand who gone to the biodynamic way. What is your thoughts about biodynamic? Not necessarily to Claudie Bay, but is that the direction New Zealand wine could be in a better state of mind?
I'm not too sure about biodynamics. I think organics.
That's enough.
I think, if you start picking on moon cycles and et cetera, it gives you a very limited window, especially with Sauvignon Blanc, try and be able to pick all your fruit in a very short time. So I don't know if that's a way forth, and it definitely isn't for Claudie Bay. But I think everyone should be looking at ways of working better and leaving the land in a better place, regardless if it's organic or conventional or biodynamic. I think we should be doing the right thing going forward. So
I just have a question in the end here, but it's about grapes. And Austrian wine grape, Grüner Veltliner, who is probably similar to Sauvignon Blanc. It's high acidity. It's green when they're young. Have you ever tasted Grüner Veltliner from New Zealand who is good?
There's a few people producing them. Yeah. We don't have any.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more alternative grapes getting planted in New Zealand, and people are looking at alternatives going forward. And these are probably driven by consumer. There's definitely a move away from the more well-known varietals from younger consumers. They want to try something different, and then to the natural wines, etc. That there's definitely a movement happening in New Zealand, but I think also, again, where's winery going to be in 30 years time? Maybe some of these varietals are going to be better suited to be grown in New Zealand than something else, Chardonnay or
As you probably know, the England is the one who is producing now sparkling wine. We recently have a tasting in Norway where two English wines beat a Champagne, a very good brand, between 50 sommeliers in Norway. So they are changing. It's positive. But of course, a brand as Clos du Bay, who is benchmark as a premium brand of one of the biggest brand owners in the world, they are keeping on the money as we see it. They want to keep the money and they want to make the best quality as they could. But also the market for New Zealand is in a big market as in Norway. Have to be understanding that Clos du Bay is the icon to the New Zealand. You can't compare it to Sancerre. You can't compare it to other Sauvignon Blanc, I think. No. Mostly because of acidity, as you see in the current vintage 21, and when it's coming after this air sickness, the 22, you will see that it's a clear value for money wine. But what I see from others outside Clos du Bay is the other wines, of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay you have in the portfolio. When did the Chardonnay and Pinot Noir arrive the Clos du Bay
portfolio?
Yeah,
so Chardonnay was the second wine ever made at Clos du Bay. So
in 86 or 85?
The first obviously was the Sauvignon Blanc in 85, and then in 86, I'm sure it was 86, it might have been 87, the first Chardonnay came out.
So it's quite similar. But the Chardonnay is kind of, it have been oak influence in the, I just read some tasting notes that there have been oak influence, and then it ended more or less. You have two.
We've always only had one Chardonnay, and it's always oak.
But not so much oak and in the past.
It's gone up and down. Originally they might have been higher up, and then when I first came to Clos du Bay, we were sort of 30% new oak, French oak. We're sitting around about 20 now. We cut it right back down to sort of 15, but then out of that, we, as you mentioned earlier, like we're always investing, and we're investing on our sites and technology. So we're lucky enough to come around here to Europe and go around and taste many amazing producers and see what's going on. And we bought a couple of coves back in 2015, which we really loved what was happening with our Chardonnay. So now we've added that to part of the protocol of Chardonnay, and also to cocoa. We use 6,000-litre coves now to ferment our Chardonnay in, and we find that there's a lot more, a better integration with the oak, and definitely I think all the wines, and especially Chardonnay, is probably for me the most underrated of the portfolio, but I do believe all the wines are going in a really good direction at the moment.
It's a completely different aroma style, different, but it's more pleasant, easy drinking, but without the butterness feeling you often have from the Chardonnay lovers. It have fruit, driven yellow fruit, but still have that. Of course, the Sauvignon Blanc is a sharpness in your mouth with acidity, and Chardonnay for Clos du Bay is more decent drinking wine, food friendly. So on. But when I've tasted the Pinot Noir, I think the Pinot Noir is what is the positive part of the red side of Clos du Bay. It's fruit driven, quite light wine, but in good concentration, have the Pinot Noir notes from aromas, but also lack of aromas compared to Europe. But if you don't take away the comparisons, it's a good, well-made wine from New Zealand compared to others, and it's well-priced. And that means should be the buying factor, because the storage potential for the Pinot Noir is quite high, especially the cork one.
Yeah, so we have two Pinots. We have the Marlborough Pinot Noir, which is with the Stelvin cap, and that's fruit picked from where we are in Marlborough, but a bit more in the Southern Valley, so a little bit more south from where the winery is. And then we have the Te Wahi, which is from Central Otago, which is about another 300 kilometres south of where the winery is. And very different wines. For me, I see in the Marlborough Pinot Noir, it's got a nice mix of reds, blacks and greens. There's a bit more spice, a bit more lift, and there's a real nice play between sort of acid and tannin. Where the Te Wahi, for me, is a lot more opulent, a lot more plush. There's more concentration. Be more in the sort of darker fruits, but the 2018 is actually a bit more perfumed and lift, which is out in the market at the moment. So.
I think Clos de Bay should be reached out for much better. More people, of course. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know of the brand. But I assure you, if you test out the Clos de Bay, you will definitely have something who is part of New Zealand history, but also very good point marks to placed New Zealand in quality. Sadly enough, the Norwegian monopole. They have a good selection in the order range, but in the basic listing, there are quite few. That should be changed. It should be another listing of New Zealand wines. I'm so glad you come to the podcast, Daniel. I will probably see you again quite soon. And next time you're in Norway, we should go to the sea market and have some oysters food.
I'll definitely be up for that. Love oysters, and especially with the Cloudy Bay Sauvignon Blanc.
And I want to listen now after the wine talk. The car, how old was it?
1964.
Yeah, and you, how was the condition when you took over?
It needed a bit of love.
It's
a 55-year-old car. Yeah. You know, we all at 55. I'm sure need a little bit of extra love around. And, it's. You know, still got a fair bit to go.
Yeah. How many hours did you take to fix it?
Oh, it's been going for nearly 3 years now.
3 years. So, okay, you have been to work and then you fixed your car. Okay. But is a special reason why it became a Falcon? Or
I just love the curves and shapes of the car. And, can't afford an Aston Martin, so that's the next dream. Best option.
Okay. Yeah. So, but it costs the same amount of money in that.
Well, same amount of time of love that you have to put into restoring anything. It's worth it in the end.
Yeah, but the interest for restoring things is good. I myself, I have restored not so much, but I fixed a Toyota downstairs in the cellar. Nice. Quite a bit, some polish and so on, very nice, but not the normal thing I do. Yeah. People don't believe me when they see me, but they are quite fun, but not in the position you are. Again, thank you again, Daniel, to being here. I hope you will have a great time in Norway. I look forward to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ukens vindtips med Svein en Finansavisen podcast. Programleder Svein Lindin, produsent Lars Brenden Skram, og podcast- og videoansvarlig Marius Mørk Larsen. Ansvarlig redaktør Trygve Hegdar.